Okay, let's take it away. Here we go. So, let me begin by saying that Agadata has to be understood, as the Farshim say, Rambam and others, that it has to be understood as poetry. And one has to approach it that way, I think. I'll mention very quickly something we've seen inside, I'm not going to spend a long time on it. The Rambam's famous comment in Perish Mishnayot on Perich Chelek, where he talks about the three approaches to Agadata. There are those who take it literally, read it on the surface and say, boy, Chazal say ridiculous things. That's number one. Number two, there are those who read Agadatas and say, well, Chazal say it must be true, and then they believe ridiculous things. And the third, which he says are by far the minority, those who say, Chacham are saying something deep, we have to understand what they're saying, and we have to understand on a deeper level. And obviously that's the approach that the Rambam and many, many other Rishonim advocate. And we're going to try to take that third approach. Yes?
So just by saying obviously there are deeper meanings, does that mean that it actually never happened? It's just an idea?
Well, it's saying that you can't just take it on a surface level and take it at that. Okay? That's not to say that there wasn't a discussion between Rabbi Yoshua and maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. I don't know. It's not really important. But certainly that's not what the Gemara is saying. And this is really not just in terms of how, Mepharshim approach Agadah in general, and the Gaon and Rishonim Achronim to that effect, but in terms of understanding this particular Gemara. Okay, I'd like to begin with a comment by the Maharsha. Maharsha is one of the great, great early Achronim, very beginning of the period of the Achronim. The Maharsha, full Shas contains, on every Masechta contains the Maharsha, Chidush HaLacha, Chidush HaGadot. And the Chidush HaGadot, he introduces his very long discussion. It's many pages long. And I should mention, there is a vast literature of commentary on this sugya. Okay? The Maharal goes on for about a dozen pages on this Gemara. Okay? In his Chidush HaGadot. The Maharsha, for many pages, depending on the particular, pagination, but it goes on for a very long time. Rav Nachman of Breslov in Likutei Maran has many, many, many chapters devoted to this sugya, and so on and so forth. Rav Yaakov Milissa, the author of the Netivot, on Chosh Mishpat, the great, great Achronim, has a couple of pages discussing this sugya, and so on down the line. Okay. We're not going to go through all of the commentary that there is because there's so much, but I'm going to mention here and there a few comments of others, and primarily what I really am going to try to do is to look at the Gemara itself and to try to suggest an approach both to individual pieces of the Gemara and to the totality of this sugya to try to suggest what it's all about. Okay? But first the Maharsha. Okay? We'll let the Maharsha introduce it. Bagadat Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya im sabe debe atuna lufi sherabim matmihim bedivrei agadah zo. Many are surprised by this Gemara. They asked about this Gemara. B'inyan nitzuach sabit be'atuna ha'mefursamim b'chachma gam b'nyanei ha'kesar im ha'chacham bal ha'nitzachon b'kol makom Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya asher alav ne'mar b'zeh ashrei yuladato kanir'eh sh'ayu menatzchim zeh etzeh b'divrei hitul b'sheker. It looks like this is it's so strange. It sounds like they're arguing about nonsense and about things that are false. K'moshen batzman mi'idim al zeh, sh'amar lei neima isha amru lei neima milta debidai. In other words, it says in the Gemara that they asked him, tell us things that are false. V'shiyev Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya moser nafsho l'ktala al dvarim ka'elu. What he had this wager in which if he lost, he would get killed. And he would give up his life, what, for these shtuyot? It's ridiculous about things that are, talking about how do you fix salt that gets spoiled? What do you do to salt that gets spoiled when the salt doesn't get, what kind of shtuyot? And why is he arguing about this? And when he goes in this whole thing, it doesn't make any sense. And he says furthermore, and it's also very strange, that Adrim Gael, Gamma Talmud, The Gemara Shemazkir called him Divrehem. Why does the Gemara go on for an entire Amud quoting this discussion when it all sounds like nonsense? Shalfia nireh, the way it looks on the surface, ein bahem lo chachma, v'lo musar, dvar sotayim al machsor. It sounds like just a waste, you know, that we're chatting about stupidities. T'ladivim mi'sefer ben sira, shasur l'kropo, v'gris from chitzonim. V'alkein atati libi l'drosh al kavanat divrehem. Shehem be'emet, mashal mitzab, divrei chachma, v'muna, b'toratenu, etc. Okay, so the Marsha therefore says, I try to understand what this is really alluding to. What is going on beneath the surface? What is this Gemara really talking about? And the Marsha has a very fascinating approach, and there's a lot to be said from the Marsha's approach, even though we're not going to really follow it, because I think that there's a better way to explain the Gemara, more accurate way, Laniyat Daiti. But in any case, we'll certainly mention some of the things the Marsha says that are very important. The Marsha is there for you to look at. You're welcome to look at his approach, and I'm going to mention what his general approach is and why I think there's a better approach. But in any case, globally, I mean, in terms of many of the individual things he says, that there's certainly much to be said for it. Similarly, the Maharal, you know, again, there are important things that he says, and certainly worth learning through, and you know, and the Marsha and the Maharal, I did go through everything they said. I believe I can't say about every single thing that's written about this, but certainly those I did go through, and there are pieces that we're going to see, but I'd like to suggest begadol and approach the entire Gemara. The first question that we have to ask ourselves, I think. The first question that we have to ask ourselves, if we want to understand this Gemara, what's the first question we have to ask ourselves?
Who are they?
Excellent. Who are they? Who are the Sabei de Be'atuna? Okay? So who can tell me, who are the Sabei de Be'atuna?
Not Jewish people.
Okay, that's a good start.
Isn't but Athens?
Okay, excellent. Atuna is Athens. Okay, Atuna or Atina is Athens. Okay, good.
Or what?
Athens.
There are mashals to the Yetzer Hara.
Whether or not it actually happened is not the point. But who are the and particularly we're talking about Be'atuna, okay?
Philosophers.
So we are talking about the classical Greek philosophers. I think that's absolutely correct. Okay.
Be means
the house of, right? But if we're talking about, you know, probably a more accurate translation is the school of Athens. And what's the school of Athens? We're talking about the classical Greek philosophers.
He just killed them all.
Okay.
Sure.
What?
It's a famous painting. And it's like you have all these...
Okay.
And he just drowned them.
No, it's like this house, and like they have all these, like this painter painted all the Greek philosophers.
Okay,
you
so...
put it on the cover of your
So... Now... Let's just, you know, I will say that you know, I don't claim to be an expert in classical Greek philosophy, but anyone who's even, you know, read some of the works of Plato, I think is, you know, will immediately recognize when you look at this Gemara what it is that this Gemara is really about. That I think is really the starting point for beginning to understand this Gemara. What this Gemara is really about in Laniyat Daiti is the following. It's really describing a clash in worldviews between the approach of Torah, represented by Rabbi Yeshua, and the approach of let's say classical philosophy, on the other hand, represented by the Chakimei de Be'atuna.
This Gemara
is describing, right? Obviously, from the Gemara's perspective. I'm not saying that this is an objective. This is giving the Gemara's description of two approaches, and obviously the point of the Gemara is to express, you know, the superiority of the approach of Torah. Now that's what this Gemara is really about. And just to give you an example of where you see that this is what's going on, right? Let's go back to the original encounter, the beginning of the encounter. Again, we're not going in order, but if you at this point it pays to switch to the source book, okay? And again, you have the whole Gemara here, but broken up into little pieces together with additional things. Where do I get this from? So take a look at number 6 on page 2. Let's go to number 6 on page 2. Again, the numbers, obviously, I just added the numbers just to make it easier to reference the point in the Gemara we're up to. It's easier than just saying, you know, whatever, you know, turn to page 2 or whatever. If you just look, number 6, okay? Amale, mayabidite, amalahu, hakimad yudayana, ba'inan lemigmar chachmata minaychu. I want to learn wisdom from you. I want to acquire wisdom from you. And what's their response to his saying, I want to acquire wisdom from you? Right? So he says, okay, ihachi nibai lach, then we are going to ask you questions. Not you should ask us questions, we are going to ask you questions. Okay? And his response is, amar lehu l'chayai, excellent. Izachi tuli, if you best me in the discussion, kol davaitu abid bi, v'izachina b'chu, ichlu gabai b'sminta. In other words, where do we get, it sounds on the surface like such a strange thing. First of all, he comes and says, I want to acquire wisdom from you, and what's the response? Good, so we'll ask you questions. And then his response is, so we're going to have a contest? Excellent. You know, if you win, if I win, this is what's going to happen. Okay? If you've read, you know, Plato's dialogues, you recognize what's going on here and it makes so much sense. Right? In other words, what happens in a typical dialogue by Plato, right? Someone, you know, the person who wants to, you know, someone wants to acquire wisdom, let's say from Socrates, what does Socrates do? He starts asking them questions. Right? Right? This is
the Socratic method.
Exactly. This is classically what happens in any of the in virtually any of the dialogues of Plato, right? That someone, you know, wants to acquire wisdom from Socrates. What does Socrates do? He says, okay, so I'll ask you a question. How do you define this? What do you think this means? You know, oh, but one second, there's a problem with that, etc. And it ends up being a kind of a contest between them. This is exactly, so Lania Daiti, the key to understanding this is to correctly identify who is this debate between. It's the debate between Rabbi Yeshua and... Now, I don't mean to say that Rabbi Yeshua is necessarily literally speaking to Plato or to Socrates or to Aristotle or whatever, but rather it's a description of a debate between these two perspectives, perspective that's represented by the classical ancient Greek philosophers on the one hand, and the Chachmei Torah on the other hand, or a debate between philosophy and Torah. Yes, Alicia?
Couldn't it be that like they were asking him questions so that they would know like where he was standing, kind of thing? Like if like he just couldn't answer the question, she was like, I don't know. So it's not to see if he knows it, isn't it? Like if he knows how to deal with that type of thought.
So the reason that I'm suggesting what I am is that if you follow the flow, what happens? He says to them, I have come here to acquire wisdom from you. Right? And so what do you suggest? Their answer is, okay, we'll ask you questions. So what are you suggesting? Why are they asking questions then?
Like, isn't it to see like how he can like, I don't know, like cope with the pressure of trying to answer this? To see like yeah, it will be nice if you know it, but like can you actually deliver what you know? Like, isn't that a whole lot? The person would be the student, but if you can't speak, then do you know what I mean?
You're saying it's a test to see whether or not they are going to impart their wisdom to him? Okay, it could be. It could be. Again, as I say, you know, agatha is like poetry. It's very hard to, you know, say conclusively in poetry, you know, this is necessarily what it means or not, right? It's in the eyes of the beholder to a large degree. You know, I'm just trying to give you suggestions. I would say, though, maybe reserve judgment until you see the whole picture, because what I'm saying is not based on one line. But I'm just giving you, this is the first thing that I would point to is, The way the whole thing takes place, and again, if you read, you know, Dialogues of Plato, this Maj, you read this Gemara, and the whole Gemara reads like such a dialogue. Okay? Can I ask the people who have read, I don't know how many people, I'm not putting one on the spot, how many people have or have not, but of the people who have read Plato, do you understand what I'm saying? That this whole sugya sounds very much like such a dialogue?
Yeah.
Right? It makes sense. So I think that's part of what the Gemara is doing is deliberately imitating that. Now, I just want to say, we'll make one global comment before taking the next of your comments, and that is the Marsha, throughout his explanation of this Gemara, I believe if you read the whole parish of the Marsha in this sugya, the common denominator of everything he says, and his parish on this Gemara is fantastic. It's a great, he has tremendous suggestions, and really it's trying to minimize, it's very important, it's worth reading, and he makes excellent points, and he has very sharp suggestions for how to read this Gemara as a mashal. But the way he explains the Gemara, I think his underlying assumption is that it's basically about a debate between Judaism and Christianity. Okay? That's how I think the Marsha reads it.
Is Greek Christian? No, it's like Hellenism.
So, you know, there is a real... The church, like Judaism, does utilize Greek philosophy, right? But I'm talking about like later church fathers, but I'm not an expert, in church theology. But what I'm saying is that obviously, there are those who used Greek philosophy and integrated Christianity with it, etc. Okay, Thomas Aquinas, but my point is that, his understanding of it is that he takes it as being a debate about, whether Judaism and Christianity is right, basically. If you look at the way, and he didn't say it in so many words, but it's very clear, if you look at how he interprets the various back and forth, the Shakbatai and the Gemara, it's clear that that's what he has in mind, right? Sometimes it's clearer or less clear, but I think it's clear that that's what his underlying assumption is. I think that I'm not saying it's wrong, one could certainly say, and there are many times where the Gemara, where there are euphemisms in the Gemara where they talk about kutim, right? And what they really mean is, Christians. And it's certainly possible, and if you ask the Marsha, say, but they're talking about Sabe de Beatuna, that Sabe de Beatuna are, Athens is not, it's not a way of referring to Christianity. He would no doubt say, I understand that, but it's, the Gemara didn't want to say outright that we're talking about Christianity because they couldn't, so instead they said that, And I understand that, and I respect that. However, if you look at the substance of what's said, and the form of what's said, etc., Nir'ali, that's not primarily what it's about. Again, I'm saying my personal understanding of it, and, I'm going to try to show you what, I'm not trying to prove anything, I'm just trying to give you a suggestion of how one could read the Gemara and make sense of it. I'm certainly not trying to keep from you the Marsha. In fact, we're going to see many pieces of the Marsha. But a lot of what I didn't put in from the Marsha is because I think he makes that underlying, that's the assumption he starts from. And I think that really, really, the Gemara really is about, Greek philosophy versus Torah and specific points about it. Yes?
Oh, I don't have a question.
Oh, I thought you were raising it. Sorry. Yes? Okay, go ahead.
Building on what Shev said about asking him questions. Well, if you were like, that, I'm just imagining that like, if this character came and approached him, they'll be curious about firstly how he got in, what his purpose is, why is he saying, can I learn from you? Maybe they're wondering if they should accept him, and therefore they ask him questions.
Right, except.
And then he turns it into a competition.
Right, I just say that, I hear that, you should be aware that, you just take note of the fact that the Gemara, they never get beyond that. In other words, there never is, that second, In other words, it doesn't seem to be an introduction. That seems to be all that happens.
Right.
Is this, They're asking questions, is the entire Gemara. But okay, it could be, again, as I said before, you can't judge from one line in the Gemara. I'm just pointing out that, in general, the Gemara sounds very much like a dialogue in Plato. And you can do with that as you wish. I'm just pointing it out as a suggestion. But I hear what you're saying. Could be. Okay, yeah.
Also, they never conclude the snake thing.
What?
They never conclude the snake.
Ah.
They just kill
the snake. Is the snake relevant?
We'll get back to the snake. B'li Neder, we will talk about the snake. Okay? We will talk about the snake. Okay? B'li Neder. We're not necessarily going to do everything today, but we will come back to the snake. B'li Neder. I have every intention of returning to the snake. Okay, let's go back. Let's go back and try to see a little bit more about this Gemara. I'm not going to go in order because I think it'll be better if we don't, but let's take a look at what I think is really one of the critical lines of Gemara. I want to look at line 12, point 12. Okay, it's the bottom of page 2. Okay, we're at number 12. Let's take a look for a moment. Mitziata d'alma hecha. Where is the center? Where is the middle of the world? Zakfal etzvate, he lifted up his finger, and Amalu, he said to them, Hacha, it's here. Amaleu miyemar, who says? How do we know? So he answers, Aitu ashle umashchu, right? You know, bring a rope and measure it. What does this line mean? So, again, poetry, and I'm not saying that I can say anything definitively, but I'd like to make a suggestion. And I think that there's a very, very important and deep point here. And I think that this is one of the most, this is like really critical to the whole Gemara. The Midrash says in Echar Ravati, Parasha Bet, the following. Tav'u va'aret sha'areha. Rav Huna b'shem Rav Yossi Omar, sha'arim chalku kavod la'aron, l'fichach lo shaltu b'em oyev. Hadal d'chtiv, su'u sha'arim r'sheichem. L'fichach tav'u va'aret sha'areha, hava v'shemer b'recheha. Okay, Machav Sareha, that part doesn't really concern us. It's the beginning of the paragraph. We continue. Machav Sareha Bagoyim Ein Torah. Okay? It says that on Ein Bagoyim Ein Torah, the end of the phrase, the Midrash makes the following comment. Listen very carefully. And we've discussed this before, but it's worth going back. And we've discussed this Chazal before, but we need to look at it in this context. Im Yomar Lecha Adam, if a person tells you, Yesh chachma bagoyim, okay, it's very relevant to our Gemara. If someone says to you, there is chachma amongst the other nations, ta'amin, believe him. Hadau d'chtiv, bavati chachamim me'adom, utfuna me'harisav. So you see that there's a special decree that Hashem says, I'm going to remove the chachma from Edom and Esav. But you see that there was such a thing as chachma amongst Edom and Esav. But yesh Torah b'goyim al tamim. But someone tells you that there's Torah amongst the other nations, don't believe it. Dechtiv malkav sareha b'goyim in Torah. Nevi'ah elu nevi'ah sheker, gam nevi'ah elu nevi'ah met, elu ve'elu lamasu chazom Hashem, etc. Okay, but the key line here that interests me is chachma b'goyim ta'amin, and Torah b'goyim, chachma b'goyim ta'amin, but Torah b'goyim al tamim. Rabbi Yeshua says, what do they say to Rabbi Yeshua? Right? What is the Gemara saying? And again, I don't think that this is meant to be a transcript of a real conversation. Certainly not a transcript of it. Whether it was a real conversation or not, I have no idea. But certainly not that this is a transcript of it. But the Gemara is telling us something very, very fundamental. Where is the center of the world? Where is the center of the world? The point is that you can't measure and arrive at where the center is because
there's no center.
There is. It depends. It depends on your.
It's a circle. Everything can be
whatever you make it.
Exactly. The core.
So the point is. So the point is, and what I think the Gemara is really telling us is the following. Gemara is really telling us the following. And this is what I think the Gemara is saying, but again, it's a suggestion, right? Poetry, I'm telling you what it says to me. And this is one of the key lines of the Gemara. Gemara is saying like this. Rabbi Yeshua is saying, you know, if you want to know where the center is, if you want to know where the center is, it depends on it's a question of values. It's a question of arachim. It's a question of priorities. And science, philosophy, science, a secular perspective of wisdom cannot answer that question. Science can't tell you where the center is. It can tell you that if you start here and go to here, it can give you an accurate measurement of exactly how many millimeters it is from here to there. But whether you decide to begin measuring here or begin to decide measuring there, whether you place the center here, place the center there, that's a question of, you know, you can't measure that. You can, that's a question of values. So what it's really saying is, Rabbi Yoshua is able to say, this is the center. Rabbi Yoshua says, the point of the Gemara is that the Chacham of Torah can tell us what is more important, what's less important, what's central, what's less, you know, what's peripheral, where the core of the world is, what the center of things is. And they go to him and say, oh, how do we know that's true? Well, like, where are it? He says, well, take, just measure it, right? And he's making, you know, the Gemara is essentially mocking. It's saying that you can't figure, you know, you're questioning whether it's right because you say, like, let me take a measuring stick. You can't measure. It's not something that's subject to measurement. And this is really, you'll see that there are other parts of the Gemara that connect to this. There is a different role, as we know, and this is not a chiddush, but we know that there is a difference in role between what Torah tells us and what science tells us. Science can tell us many, many valuable things. Philosophy can tell us many valuable things. The Gemara is not questioning that. The Gemara is not denying that there is chachma, that there's chachma bagayim, that it's possible to measure accurately using philosophy, using science. But it can't tell us where the center is. It can't tell us where, what the core is, what's the Seder Hadifiyot. I don't think I said that right, but anyhow. Sorry, I'm a little under the weather. But in any case, this I think is the point of this, and it very much connects with the overall idea of what the Gemara is about. Okay. Let's go, please, to Shnia. And now we will second keep track of what we did and didn't do. Okay. Let's go back to the beginning. Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. So then, if you're saying that he says that the center is here because that's how his perspective and his values influence him to think, then why would he think that that's the center, like when he's battling with these
Kohanim. Right, so I think the point is that what does the Gemara say he did? Right? He lifted up his finger and pointed up and said, that's the center. Meaning, what he's saying is that the center is not what's down here. The center is, right, is spiritual. The center is Hashem is, and that's really what he's saying to them. You know what I'm saying? And that's the point. That he's saying that your tools, right? He's mocking. He's saying your tools for measuring don't give you the answer to the question of what it's about. It doesn't give you an answer to the question of meaning, of value, of pride. It gives you an answer to that. How far is it from here to there? Right? It can measure what it's meant to measure, but it can't measure that which it's not, which is not within its system.
I agree with that. Could it also mean that, like, in a way, maybe instead of saying, like, okay, obviously it's like it's not just something that we can measure in this world, so that's what he's pointing out, but also is it something to do with like the communication between like a Torah, like Jew teaching, like Gorian, that like Torah is the ultimate way? Maybe is there something to do with like, that's the focus of why he's saying this is the focus of the world?
It's certainly possible, sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's turn now to the beginning. Okay, let's go to number one. Okay. Amalei Kesel Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. Nachash l'kama mebar umolid. Amalei l'shev shnei. Vasabi d'be atuna ar inhu v'olid l'tzlat. Hanu me'arbre havi me'ikara dal shnei. Vaka me'shamshe shimushe. Inhu na me'shamshe ka'adam. V'chakime inhu. Anan chakima minayhu. I'chakima atzil zachinhu v'aitinu li. So Amalei Kamahavu, etc. Okay, and we'll get back to the continuation. The Gemara begins, and we'll see really ends as well, but begins with, what does the Gemara begin with? Discussion of the Nachash. Where does this come from? So if you look at the Gemara right before, which is not on the page, but if you look at where this comes from, it comes from a discussion of what the onish of the Nachash was. Okay? Meaning that this is the Nachash that we're really talking about is what Nachash? What Nachash are we really talking about? Right, the Nachash of Breshit, right? The Nachash from the story of the Eitz Hadaat. And, in fact, this is alluded to again and again in the Gemara. For example, where the Gemara makes a comparison between the Nachash and whom? We just read it. Humans. And what does the Gemara say? That it is like, what's the word of the Gemara? What's the language of the Gemara? Ke Adam. Right? Okay, so in other words,
what number is that under?
Number one. Second, end of the second line, number one. Okay? Inhu, referring to the Nachash, Nami Mishamshe Ke Adam. Right? So in other words, the point of the relationship between the Nachash and Adam has a dual meaning here. Right? Now, what else do you recognize from Breshit in this story? Not just the Nachash and Adam, but there's another element at least, which is very important, which is, at the end of the story, talks about the relationship between the Sabid Beatuna and what?
The
emperor. I don't know. The Afar, right? The Afar. Okay, the Afar. The connection between them, between the people, and the Afar of their land, right? Where they come from. And so, if you go to Breishit for a moment, yes? The beginning of the story, the whole point of the 7 years, if you, again, we didn't read the very beginning of the Gemara, we start from the Kesar, speaking to Rabbi Hananya, but this is really a continuation discussion of the curse of the Nachash, right? And that's what the whole thing is based on. So, Banachash haya rumi kol chayat ha-sadeh ashar sadmer Elohim, ויאמר לאישה, אף כי אמר אלוהים לא תאכלו מכל עץ הגן. ותאמר אישה אל נחש, מפרי עץ הגן נאכל. ומפרי העץ אשר בתוך הגן אמר אלוהים לא תאכלו ממנו, ולא תיגעו בו, פן תמותון. ויאמר נחש אל האישה, למות תמותון, כי יודע אלוהים, כי ביום אכלה ממנו ונפקחו עיניכם, וייתם כאלוהים יודעי טוב ורע. ותרא האישה, כי טוב העץ למאכל, וכי תאווה לעיניים, ונחמד העץ להשכיל. The story of the Nachash and Adam is all about the question of a clash between two perspectives, a divine perspective and a human perspective. Right? The way that Adam and Chava see things and the way that Hashem sees things. Right? That's what it's all about. And I believe that that's really central to this whole Gemara. That's really central to this whole Gemara.
How did you figure this out?
You're smart. I spent a long time on the Gemara. I got it from the Gemara. But in any case, I will tell you, I spent many, many, many hours on this Gemara. Believe it or not, many. I can't tell you how many hours. Primarily because I don't know, but it was a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I'm done, but I'll try to share with you a little bit of what of suggestions. If you look at the end of the Gemara, right, if you look at the end of the Gemara, right, the thing with the Afar, so I just want to, this is on page, the bottom of page 3, okay. Number 17. Bahadit katu shakal afra me'afrayu, matu de'vali ma'alu kuza de'maya de'vali, right, and the whole thing with throwing later on he throws the dirt on them, So I want to share with you, first of all, just to see the Maral says that when it says that he threw dirt on them, it doesn't mean that he literally threw the dirt on them, but it means Vizesha She Amar Shanatana Lehem Meafrayu Hainu Ki Kasher Hizkir Lahem Rabbi Yeshua in Yan Artsam. It means that he mentioned to them about their land. He reminded them about their home, their land, Asherhem Yoshvimba. Vizenachshav Shanatana Lehem Meafrayu Baaz Hayu Meizim. Breish Perak Gimel, the end of the story. By Yom Razon Elohim El Nachash, Ki Asita Zot Arura Ta Mikol Abeima Mikol Chayat Hasadeh Agichoncha Telech VeAfar Tochal Kol Imei Chayecha. Few pesukim later, Pasuk Yutet, VeZeyat Apecha Tochal Lechem Ad Shuchal Adama Ki Mimena Lukachta Ki Afarata VeAfar Tashuv. Okay? And I think that this is an important aspect of our sugya. Okay? I'd like to go now to bear with me for one moment. Where do I want to go to? Oh yeah, this is fascinating. Okay? This is fascinating. Is it? Give me one second. Ah! The clash between the two. Okay, good. Number two. Let's go to number two for a moment. Okay? Number two. Kimat lahatam. Alabei tavcha. Askche lahu gavra de kapashit chiyuta. Amalei reishcha lizvune. Amalei in. Amalei bekama. Amalei palga de zuza. Yavlei. Lesov amalei ana reisha de chiyuta amrilach. Amalei ibayet ishkach sagi achvili pitcha de beatuna. So look what we have here. And this, I think, is so interesting. And part of what I wanted to say, I found in the Maharal, and some of it not. So we'll start with the Maharal, and then we'll go from there. The Maharal says as follows: Reish chazvunila zavnitli. You sold me your head. Kimahif reish ein bein shneihem. What's the difference between your head and the animal's head? Ukamosh rosh balechayim eno nechshav leklum v'nishchat nefsad legamrei. Kach nefesh haadam u'shneihem mishpat echad lahem. Im ein kana sechel shu nosaf al nefesh adam lekach amar le ibay dashkilach kolomar im atar rotzeh shani achotcha v'yeh ha'efresh bin adam uvein shar balei chayim. So then you have to show me the pitcha de be'atuna. I'd like to take this in a slightly different direction, but essentially it seems to me that what we have here is something very, very fascinating, which is that what is the issue here? The issue here is, do we view a human being as being something different than another animal? Right? Do we understand that there's a Tzelem Elokim? Do we, understand that there is a spiritual dimension to man, that there is an entire other realm beyond the physical, or not? And from that perspective, which I think is, part of the debate to a certain degree between a secular philosophical perspective and a Torah perspective, and obviously I'm oversimplifying, but I think what the Gemara is saying here is something very fascinating. That, as much as a person might claim that, I view life from a purely secular perspective, I'm going to say this in modern terminology. Obviously, I'm being anachronistic. I don't mean that the Gemara is saying exactly, this type of terminology, but I think that this is the modern version of what the Gemara is saying. There is, if I remember correctly, Rav Sadigon in Emunot V'Dayot, so I'm saying it's by means of analogy purely, and I'll get to the modern terminology, and this is not the point of the Gemara, but it's a parallel to it. The Rav Sadigon, if I remember correctly, it's a long time ago, I think, says something along these lines. He says, if a person tells you, I don't believe in Bechira Chavshe, I don't believe that human being has free will. So the way to deal with that philosophically is to punch them in the nose. I'm paraphrasing. He doesn't use exactly that terminology. But he says, hit them! They get angry at you and say, why are you angry at me? I didn't have any choice but to hit you. There's no, right? There's no free will. I didn't have a choice but to hit you. So what do you want from me? Right? The point being that whatever we may argue philosophically, and whatever we may claim to believe, deep down, every one of us understands that we have free will and that we're responsible for our actions. We may, when it's convenient, say otherwise, but that's really the truth of the matter. Along similar lines, a person may say that, you know, I really believe in evolution as explaining everything, and I think that, you know, everything in the world is just based on purely physical laws and based on chance, and it's, you know, random, and that there's no guiding hand, there's nothing more to the world, there's no spiritual dimension, there's no God, etc. But in the end of the day, deep down we all understand and we all really believe that there's a vast difference between a human being and another collection of electrons, like a rock or a cockroach or whatever the case may be, and that we understand that a human being, there's something about a human being that's different than just another animal, and that there is something beyond. And that, I think, is the point of this Gemara. In other words, Rabbi Yeshua goes to him and says, you know, Reish Chalizvune, and he says, you know, sure, I'll be glad to sell you my head, right? And the point is that there's an illustration of the fact that this person, whether he, you know, is going to, you know, this is his first encounter, when he first comes to Athens, first encounter is the fact that, like, you can be as philosophical as you want about it, but at the end of the day, you realize that there's a difference between your head and this animal's head. That's not all the same. That there's and if you don't understand it fully about someone else, you certainly understand about yourself, right? If you really, really maintain philosophically that there's that you're just there's really no meaning to your life, etc. You know, see that you don't really believe that. In any case, yeah.
Does that mean that you're saying that Greek philosophy negates that there's a difference?
No, I'm saying that. Well, obviously, Greek philosophy is not monolithic, right? And different philosophers take different positions, and so it depends which Greek philosopher you're talking about and in what way. But I'm saying, talking about the general approach, right, to take a basically secular approach to life, and it's arguing against that, and saying that, you know, that you may not openly admit to me that there's such thing as that, you know, at Salam Elohim, and that there's something unique about man, etc. But in the end of the day, they're real, you know. Again, the point of the Gemara is not, I'm not saying whether there's an accurate argument with Greek philosophy or not. The point is more, I'm saying what the Gemara is trying to tell us about, you know, about different approaches to life. Okay, this is the next point that I want to share with you, which I think that these different points are, in the end of the day, very much related, some in more obvious ways, some in less obvious ways. Okay. Let me just perhaps do one more line of the Gemara with you, line 10. Okay, and then Bli Neder, we will continue next time. Okay, but let's do, just because there's a lot more to discuss, but let's at least do line 10. Okay, line 10. Milcha kisarya b'may malcheila. Amalahu b'silta de kodnita. Umiika silta l'kodnita. Milcha misari. Okay, question, how do you cure salt that spoils? And the answer is, well, you take the shilya of a preda. And what is this about? So here, there's really, I think, a lot of agreement amongst the various mefarshim, and it confirms what I thought when I read this Gemara. And we could say it in slightly different ways, but the basic idea is, I think, the following. What they were suggesting is that either Bnei Yisrael or the Torah, you know, in time is decayed and it's no longer relevant. It's no longer solution. In other words, the Bnei Yisrael and the Torah, which are meant to be like the salt for the world, meaning something that preserves it, something that makes it better and allows it to be what it should be. What happens when it itself gets spoiled? As, okay, maybe the Jewish people made the Torah had its place once upon a time, but, you know, we need to update it, we need to correct it, we need to fix it. What do you fix it with? And the answer, which you know, clearly they thought the answer was, well, you know, the answer is that we need to bring in our perspective on things. We need to correct it with introducing, you know, our philosophy, etc. And Rabbi Yeshua's answer is that, you know, something that is sterile can't produce any, you know, kind of positive results. And furthermore, salt doesn't get spoiled, meaning that the problem that you think exists is not a problem. There's, you know, the Torah and Bnei Yisrael, the salt doesn't get spoiled, and certainly we can't expect a sterile source to provide the solution in any case. And that's really more or less the direction of the Marshah and Rav Tzadok. And over here, I just read very, very quickly with you. The Marshah writes, yes.
Salt itself is a preserver. Like, it saves
things. Right.
That's
the point. Agreeing with that. That's, so, the Marsha says, Mivor ki brit asher lo yitbarach imanu hu brit lo'olam, kemo ha-melach, shi'yadarar kayem lo'olam, v'shkata brit melach lo'olam, etc. Aval milcha v'abrit shalanu v'adai lo sarach hu kayam lo'olam, zarein afrein. It's a comparison. That's what I'm saying, that the salt is that which preserves, that which, you know, causes things, you know, fixes things, and it itself certainly does not get ruined. Rav Tzark writes, "Val zehu remizut divrei Rav Yeshua ben Chananya sab de be'atuna, asham bebchorot sha'amru le milcha lo sarya disham de kavana le brit melech olam di Yisrael shechashvu shekvar nikalkalu okay, etc. But there are mas lahem dehem hakudnaita she'ein oseh perot klal v'yevshar klal l'vchor bahem v'al korchach d'milcha losari. Okay, Ezra Hashem, we will continue and try to just do a little more. We're not going to do everything, but we'll at least saw a little bit. Ezra Hashem, we'll see a little bit more, and then we'll move on to another topic.
Thank you.
Shabbat shalom, everyone.